where I live.
Intruder alert, intruder alert.
Welcome aboard, Captain. Fighter pilots needed in Sector Wars. Play Astro Blaster.
R2 droid, increase the power.
Hi, friends, and welcome back to the Diary of an Arcade Employee podcast. I do want to apologize about the lateness of this particular episode. I am afraid that my day job has been rather hectic these last few weeks, and I have been hard-pressed to find the free time to record a new episode. I promise to do better in the future. Our show for this week will focus on Nishibatsu's 1980 arcade classic, Crazy Climber. Nishibatsu, or as it became known, the Nihon Busan Company, was founded in 1970 by Tsuharu Tori. It was in 1978 when they threw their hat in the arcade manufacturing ring, delivering bootleg versions of popular games, like Atari's Breakout, releasing their version as Table Attacker. In the case of their Space Invaders clone, entitled Moonbase, they found themselves in a lawsuit in which they had to pay fines on. Moonbase was released in the United States by Taito, which also would distribute Crazy Climber. I talked a bit about Taito before on the Double Dragon episode. The company was no stranger to arcade hits, as they also developed and released 1982's Jungle Hunt and 1983's Elevator Action, to name a few. Crazy Climber was designed and programmed by Shigeki Fujiwara, who would go on to design not just the 1988 sequel entitled Crazy Climber 2, but also programmed as well as designed the arcade title Moon Cresta. Later, he would go on to work with Hudson Soft and help develop some of the Bomberman series of games. Shockingly enough, for those of you that have listened to the past episodes, this was a game that was at the fabled Showbiz Pizza of my youth. But it's not where I first played it. In my neck of the woods, the very first arcade we had was called Games People Play. It was kind of a small building that had maybe 30 arcade games, with a little area in the back where pinball tables were located. This was around 1981. While I had of course played many an arcade game like Space Invaders, Space Duel and others at a local bowling alley, Games People Play was really my first taste of what an arcade should be. For most of my life, I was under the impression this was just a local business, an independent. But a few years ago, I shared some photos of a burned-out arcade over on the Retroist. One photo had a very sad-looking melted Star Wars cabinet. And in the background, I spied a sign for Games People Play. My coworker at the Arcadia Retrocade, Andy Pickle, had one in his hometown. So I'm thinking, maybe it was actually a southern chain of arcades. A few years before I would become acquainted with that Showbiz Pizza, this is where my father would take me when I needed to get my video game fix. I cannot wait to discuss Cinematronic Star Castle on the show. There was an incident that occurred with my father at Games People Play that will be a prime example of why he has never cared for video games. Anyway, this little arcade was where I was first introduced to Crazy Climber, as well as Zookeeper, Berserk, and its sequel, Frenzy. Here's the honest truth. I was good at Crazy Climber, even at 8 years old. I wasn't a champ or anything like that, but I could generally last longer than your average player. I have a very fond memory of my cousin Brandon visiting one summer, and we were able to talk our family all into going to Games People Play. I was having a particularly good run on the game, and I can recall Brandon and my aunt and uncles as well as my grandparents crowding around me, cheering me on. It was a very warm feeling to be able to show that I was good at something. I'm sure many of you have felt the same thing. It was very much like that part in The Last Starfighter, you know, where Alex Rogan beats the record. It was certainly one of the finer moments of my youth. Without a doubt, Crazy Climber is probably my favorite arcade game of all time. When Showbiz Pizza opened up, it signaled the end of the Games People Play arcade in my neck of the woods. I guess they just couldn't compete with the amount of titles at Showbiz. While it went away, the building itself has housed many a business, from an ice cream parlor to a I can't believe it's yogurt, and for the last 12 years, it's been an Asian restaurant. Let's get back on subject. Crazy Climber tasks 1 to 2 players taking turns with scaling a set of skyscrapers by way of window ledges to reach a waiting helicopter at the top. The player has 2 8-way joysticks, representing the left and right hands of Crazy Climber, and allowing the player to control those hands independently, moving them up and down, left and right, and diagonally in those directions. Moving the joysticks up makes Crazy Climber reach up for the ledge above, while Holding Down will push off the ledge that he's holding onto. Crazy Climber can also grab ledges diagonally above him, and while you can pull down on the joysticks, you can't descend the building, only ascend. To climb upwards, the player must use both joysticks, pressing up and down with the left and right sticks. So when you press up on the left joystick, you'll be pressing down on the right, etc. And when you really get going with a nice rhythm, the player can move Crazy Climber up the building at a good pace. The four buildings you attempt to climb, which represent the stages in the game, are all branches of Nishibutsu. The first level, I assume, is located in Japan, and the sign over the door on the ground level simply has the company's name. The second building is Nishibutsu Leisure, with the third being Nishibutsu USA Corporation. The fourth building you try to scale is Nishibutsu UK Limited. By the way, when a player gets near the top of the fourth building, they will find the upper levels are split into two separate towers, each of them only wide enough for two windows. If the player is able to reach the helicopter awaiting atop that building, they will be taken back to the first building, but will retain their score, and the difficulty level will increase. These Nishibutsu buildings seem to be populated with crazy people, who enjoy nothing better than trying to drop objects on Crazy Climber's head in an effort to make him fall to his death. These villains, depending on which arcade flyer you go by, are either simply called antagonists, or in the case of the title flyer, Dr. Dropper, which is as good a name as any, as these maniacally smiling people appear in random order to drop all manner of things out of their open windows, like flower pots, buckets full of water, glass soda bottles, tin cans, and even fruit baskets. In the earlier levels, if Crazy Climber has a grip on a window ledge with both hands, the object, if it hits you dead square on top of the head, will bounce off with Climber yelling, "Ow!" Even if you are anchored, so to speak, you have to avoid letting the antagonist keep dropping items on Crazy Climber, as he will eventually tumble off the building. This will occur as well if you are struck by an object while moving about the face of the building, by reaching a hand out to grip a ledge, etc. Another reason you will want to avoid the dropped objects is that for everyone that hits Crazy Climber, a set amount of the bonus rate will be deducted from the score. I'll talk about that in just a bit. Players will also have to keep an eye on those window ledges you are using to climb up, as they can prove quite deadly when their windows begin to close. In the beginning stages, they close slowly and generally allow you enough time to move to a safer area. In the upper levels, they begin to shut faster and randomly. Crazy Climber can't pull himself up or grip a ledge that has a closed window. So if you have a bad round, you can find your progression up the skyscraper suddenly halted. And nothing is worse in the game, at least for me, than being trapped in by an area of closed windows and watching helplessly as the window on my ledge slowly closes on Crazy Climber's hands, with no escape within reach, to make him plummet to his death with a digitized cry of, "Oh no!" The North American release of Crazy Climber, by the way, was the only version to include digital speech. If you're stuck too long on a spot on the building, or just hanging around, you'll get a helpful,
"Go for it!"
to try and egg you on to start climbing again. While climbing the buildings, Crazy Climber also has to watch out for the arrival of the giant condor. After a sampling of Henry Mancini's theme, Baby Elephant Walk, this foe will fly from one side of the screen and back, bombing the players with eggs and, well, excrement. In the first level, the condor will drop two things at Crazy Climber, but in the later stages, it will begin bombing you with up to 8 items. The same rules apply for the eggs and excrement as the items the antagonists drop. The condor, by the way, doesn't appear in the US Corporation stage. Avoiding the condor, falling objects, and not having windows closed on your hands is bad enough, but players must also contend with none other than King Kong at various levels of the buildings. Since Donkey Kong wouldn't be released until a year later, I guess Crazy Climber has the distinction of being the first arcade game to feature a giant ape that you had to avoid by climbing up things. Kong will show up, heralded by a sampling of the Pink Panther theme, when the width of the building narrows to a point where it's only two windows wide. Kong will pound his fists against his chest a couple of times before throwing a punch, or maybe slapping the side of the building. He will then leap on the opposite side of the building and repeat these actions. This forces the player to time their climbing after a punch is thrown. Of course, as the stages advance, Kong will move between the sides of the building much quicker and punch faster. I've always been a huge fan of King Kong and apes in general, so I think when I discovered him in the game, it really helped sell it for me. I can remember shouting for my father in games people played the first time I encountered him. While it certainly seems that Nishibutsu in the game may let crazy people occupy their buildings, they also seem to have had some issues with their building codes, as Crazy Climber must also be wary of falling girders. Beginning on the Nishibutsu Leisure stage, these small girders will fall straight down. But in the later stages, they begin to fall diagonally, which is a nightmare as you can imagine. The first time they appear for each of the buildings, when they begin to fall, you can anchor yourself to a window ledge with both hands and not be knocked off. Besides falling girders, the player must also avoid dropped dumbbells. Surely these are being dropped by the antagonist, right? They follow the same rules as the girders and generally are dropped alongside them. Shockingly enough, the player must be wary of the exposed electrical wires of signs in the upper areas of the buildings, starting with the Nishibutsu Leisure stage. Crazy Climber can be shocked 10 times while trying to get around the signs. The 11th shock, though, will cause you to lose grip on the window ledges and plummet to your death. There is only one more deadly obstacle to mention, and that is the falling Crazy Climber billboard signs that begin to appear on the Nishibutsu USA Corporation stage. They're very large, the width of three windows. At least they only drop straight down, kind of bouncing as they do, but you will be forced to scuttle quickly out of the way when they do appear. Now, Crazy Climber also has help in the game, thanks to the lucky pink balloon. These appear on the USA Corporation and the UK Limited stages. If the player can grab hold of these balloons before it floats off, they will be lifted 10 stories to a safe window, as well as earn all of the points they would normally get for climbing each window. As I mentioned earlier, waiting at the top of the building is a helicopter that will dip down a couple of times, allowing Crazy Climber to reach up and nab the runner, earning what remains of the player's bonus points before being taken to the next building. There is a pretty neat function in Crazy Climber that on the arcade flyers is called Viewer Vision. On the far left side of the screen is kind of a map of the building you're climbing. It's not detailed or anything, but it does mark your position so you can see how far up you are, as well as giving you a clue to approaching spots where, say, the building narrows. Assuming, of course, you're good enough to cast your eye over in that direction. Let's talk briefly about the scoring in Crazy Climber. On the bottom left of the screen of every stage, you will see the step point and bonus rate. The step point is how many points you will receive for climbing up each window ledge. For building 1, it's 100 points. Building 2 is 150 points. Building 3 is 200 points. And for building 4, it's 250 points for each ledge. The bonus rate is what you will receive if you reach the top of a building and manage to grab the runner of the helicopter. Doing so will grant you the remaining bonus rate. The bonus rates are set at 10,000 points for the first building, and increase an additional 10,000 for the next three buildings. On stages 1 and 2, the bonus rate will drop 100 points every 2 seconds, with stages 3 and 4 increasing the drop rate to 200 points every 2 seconds. Remember though, if you're struck by an object, you also lose bonus rate points. If you fail to grab the helicopter, you will receive no bonus rate, but earn 3,000 points for at least reaching the top of the building. Speaking of scores, the world record holder, starting the game with only 3 lives, is Jim Wright, who amassed 487,150 points, verified by a Twin Galaxies referee on July 5th, 1985. At the Arcadia Retrocade, well, I don't think anyone has gone for the high score record yet, actually. Or at least they didn't approach us and have their score recorded. I'm just going to go ahead and say Michael Dietrich would get the top prize. Crazy Climber, I think it's safe to say, was embraced far more in Japan. I mean, they released a Crazy Climber board game over there. But it did receive multiple ports to popular gaming systems of the day. If only one for North America, with the Atari 2600, which was one of the 4 titles initially offered only to those members of the Atari Club by way of the Atari Age magazine. It did manage to get a few copies released to stores, but not many, which is what helps to make this such a rare cartridge. Over on the excellent Atari Age site, it's been rated an 8 on their rarity scale, meaning it's a very rare title plus. The Retroist himself owns a copy and shared his thoughts on the port of the game. I'll be sure to include a link on this podcast post. Back in 2014, I was lucky enough to get a day off to visit the Oklahoma Video Game Exhibition that was held at the now sadly defunct PJ Gamers. While documenting the event, I was able to hold an actual Crazy Climber cartridge. But even though I felt the $80 the seller was asking was reasonable, I was worried about my wife acting like one of the game's antagonists when she found out what I spent. Crazy Climber was also released to the Emerson Arcadia 2001, but only in Japan. It's been said this port had been planned to be released in North America, but was cancelled. The Famicom received a port for the game in 1986, with the added bonus of having a controller add-on. You would use two control pads, turning them vertically to mimic the arcade control scheme. In 1996, but only in Japan, the PlayStation received Hyper Crazy Climber, which allowed players to choose from three different characters with varying skills and abilities, and climb not just a skyscraper, but beanstalks, a medieval clock tower, and even an underwater building. On March 2nd, 2000, Crazy Climber 2000 was released. Yet again, only to Japan. This is a remake and has 3D graphics, but also allows the player to move around to different sides of the building. Not just that, but those buildings also come in different shapes. In 2005, yep, only in Japan, an original arcade port was made available on the PlayStation 2. And sorry to sound like a broken record, but in 2007, the Wii received the game, and again in 2010 on the Virtual Console, but only in Japan. All hope is not lost, however. It appears you can now buy the original arcade game port and its 1988 sequel on the PlayStation 4 in the Arcade Archives collection. I believe these actually came out just on October 15th of 2015. In addition to all of these ports, back in 1981, Bandai released an electronic handheld version, which I hope to someday get my hands on, along with that board game.
Arcadia will be right back after these messages.
Ah, I've seen hot tubs before, but this is ridiculous. A kid outfit. Who knows? Who knows? Just kidding.
You can save her in Atari Jungle Hunt, just like the arcade classic. Ah! Fight man eating crocodiles. Dodge deadly boulders.
Oh, wouldn't you rather order out?
Outsmart hungry headhunters.
I know a great little Italian place. Five Jungle Hunt, please. Yeah. Hurry.
Jungle Hunt, new from Atari.
This message.
At the Arcadia Retrocade, Shay Mathis was able to pick up Crazy Climber a little over a year ago. It's out on the floor, next to Sega's Bank Panic, Universal's Mr. Do, and Konami's Circus Charlie. I think that about wraps up our podcast for this go-around. I do want to give a big thanks to Earl Green of the Logbook.com site. I'll be sure to include a link to not just his site, but the legendary Phosphor.Fossils listing for Crazy Climber. I should have a new Diary of an Arcade Employee vidcast up later this week. I'll be sure to upload it over on the Retroist, so if you love classic arcade games and want a peek of what it's like to work at a thriving retro arcade these days, you might want to check that out. The Diary of an Arcade Employee podcast has a Facebook page now. It just went live on Monday. So if you can hop on over and give us a like, we'd greatly appreciate it. It's a great spot to come on over and share your own arcade memories and enjoy the celebration of classic arcades and home video games. Our ending theme, which is entitled River Raid, was composed by the talented Tony Longworth. You can listen to even more of his music on SoundCloud and on his official site, which you can reach at www.tonylongworth.com. Friends, if you have any feedback for the show, or perhaps a suggestion for a game to cover, you can reach me at vicsage@retroist.com. Diary of an Arcade Employee is available on iTunes, so if you have a moment, I'd appreciate it if you could just stop by there and give us a positive review. It certainly helps to get the word out to new listeners. For further information about the Arcadia Retrocade itself, please make sure to follow them over on their Facebook page. I'll be sure to provide a link on the Retroist post. Of course, I want to give huge thanks to The Retroist for not just hosting this podcast, but for allowing me to record in The Retroist Vault. And when you need your daily retro fix, why not visit The Retroist site at www.retroist.com. Have a token on me, as we listen to a clip for the game I will discuss on the next show.
Get the humanoid intruder alert, intruder alert. The humanoid must not escape.
This has been a Retroist production. Goodbye, and we hope to see you next time.